Tottenham story is this. It's time to change the situation if Tottenham want to change.
I love to win, mate. That's the main thing. Hopefully I can fulfil those dreams and aspirations of every Tottenham supporter.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
He's going to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh!
I'm loving big engines instead. Guess I'm a Spurs fan now then.
Hello and welcome to the Tottenham Way podcast. I'm Tom Barkley from The Sun. I'm joined by Dan Kilpatrick of The Evening Standard. We've just watched Tottenham go 5 points clear at the top of the Premier League table. Apparently it's the first time since 1960-61 season, which was quite a famous season in Spurs' history, that they've been 5 points clear at the summit of the top flight. An interesting win over Crystal Palace tonight. They won 2-1 in the end, an own goal from Joel Ward, and then a lovely goal from Son Heung-min, continuing his fabulous run, and then a consolation from Jordan Ayew, which set up a bit of a nervy finish. But what were your overall thoughts from the game tonight, Dan?
Yeah, I thought it was a really interesting game, with lots of different passages of play, lots of different phases. I thought the first kind of half or 52 minutes before the goal was really a test of whether Spurs could kind of break down a well-organised, sort of stubborn team with the crowd behind them. And I thought, really, this is the kind of test Spurs are going to have to get used to. It was a kind of sign that Spurs are a good team now, the way Palace played. I know that Hodgson compared them to City and Arsenal before the game, and it was like Palace were playing City and Arsenal. You know, they didn't really press, they put men behind the ball, they went direct, they played in the counter, and they shaded the first half. They had lots of corners and they had the better two chances with Vicario making two saves. And it was really a kind of challenge to Spurs of break us down if you can, you know, try and play through us, try and get a goal, show us you're good enough. And Spurs were a bit flat, it was a bit stodgy in the first half. And then the question at half time was whether they could go up a gear and kind of make that breakthrough. They got a stroke of luck, although, again, we've said it before in this pod, do you make your own luck? You know, they kept going forward, they upped the tempo a little bit, I thought, at the start of the second half. It was a nice piece of play from Saar, bursting to the touchline, got the own goal, and then the second goal was fabulous. You know, the question from 1-0 was, could they up it and kind of pick off Palace, and they did that with a real kind of angible goal. Thought they played pretty well from there. It was obviously a nervous finale after Ayew scored in stoppage time. Porro made a bit of a mistake jumping under a cross. There was a shade of handball maybe, so it might have been disallowed. It was nervier than it probably should have been. But look, all round, a night of big positives again for me, I thought.
Yeah, I think anyone who was expecting Palace to roll over, having been thumped 4-0 by Newcastle at St James's Park, would be underestimating Roy Hodgson. I mean, this is his 500th. Club game as a manager of an English club. I mean, I have no idea how many the total number is in his 47-year career, but he's made a career out of grinding out results. Like, obviously, it didn't happen in the end, but the first half we saw today, it was very difficult, as you say, to play through. After that first goal went in, I was sort of writing the match report and considering how to go about it. And originally, I had a sort of intro of, well, maybe they are title contenders because if they can win ugly like this, because, you know, it's a bit of a well-worn sort of adage of football that, you know, the most successful teams do find a way to win when they're not playing particularly well and win ugly. And that's kind of how it was going. But that kind of got completely undone, really, by the second goal, because it was peak Ange ball. It was beautiful, beautiful play involving Brennan Johnson, obviously Maddison and Son finishing off. I want to talk about Son in a second, but let's talk a little bit about Brennan Johnson, because he's someone who's, he got injured, obviously came in for big money, and was thrust straight in for that Arsenal game. And whilst he didn't score, you could see why Ange went about doing it in that game. And my suspicion, I think yours too, Dan, is it won't be too long till he's taken Richarlison's place, perhaps on the left-hand side. It feels like that might be the next progression in this Spurs team, unless, of course, Richarlison can step it up even further. But with that pace that he's got in behind, that quality he seemed to have tonight with that ball, and I think he's got the finishing ability too, that might be the next step in this Spurs project.
Yeah, I think Johnson will start against Chelsea. I think he was probably not fit enough to start the last two games, but obviously Ange threw him straight in against Arsenal, which gives you a good indication of how highly he rates him. and I don't see why you won't be right and that he won't be the kind of logical player to come in for Richarlison, who I've said a couple of times now, I think is playing well, but is still kind of the weak link in this side, just by dint of not being quite good enough in the final third at the moment. You know, whether his scoring touch comes back, I'm not sure really, but
I still sense the player short of confidence.
Yeah, I actually thought he did okay tonight. I thought in terms of setting up chances, he did more than anyone in the first half. You know, he played that ball round the corner for Maddison, which got Maddison free down the left. He should have done better. He sort of hesitated.
That was bizarre, wasn't it? Given the link-up that Maddison and Son have had.
Yeah,
and,
I mean,
and just
there was
how
a chance
on point Maddison's been.
It.
It was strange. I don't know why he didn't square it.
Yeah, up, and then Maddison nodded one back, almost kind of on the byline into Maddison's path.
Richarlison, which
Maddison blows over. So he did okay, but yeah, I think Johnson will take his place for the Chelsea game, albeit that's a long way off as we sit here on Friday night. But he did very well. I mean, he came off the bench and you know, within minutes or seconds, you know, he'd made that goal with a really smart interchange with Maddison. It was a great header into him, and then he burst into the box, got the return ball and squared it for Son. And I thought his pace stretched Palace as well. He got in behind a couple of times, and he's got that directness that I think can make him a really big threat in this team.
I think that is the crucial factor. What, now that Son's obviously playing through the middle, but part of the reason for that is he doesn't quite seem to have that yard of pace, you know, when he's going one-on-one against play. He's obviously so nimble and so effective, and what a great finisher he is, that he's now working really well as a central striker. But Kulusevski's not the quickest. He's we know how tireless he works. He's a good ball carrier. There's a lot of strong parts to his game. But suddenly, without Son on the left, when he was at his quickest, they do lack a bit of speed up front. I think really Johnson does bring that into the team. You wanted to talk a little bit about some of the other players who came off the bench as well. Højbjerg, you were mentioning. You thought...
Well, I think generally... This was an interesting, or this whole week really has been an interesting examination of the squad, because obviously Bissouma was suspended against Fulham, and my instinct was that Spurs would miss Bissouma more than we realised. My instinct was that he was kind of more important than we'd even grasped, but actually Højbjerg fitted in pretty well, I thought. And then tonight they were missing Udogi, and it was a slightly different story. Udogi. I've done it again. Maybe you can edit that. Tonight they were missing Udogi, and I thought it was a different story. And actually, Davis struggled in the first half. From what we've heard tonight from a couple of guys in the press team downstairs, he was limping after the game, so it sounds like he might have been injured rather than that being a kind of ruthless substitution from Postecoglou. But you saw tonight, I think, in the first half, how much of a difference it can make just being one player short, you know, one fullback short. But then again, in the second half, on came Højbjerg, on came Johnson. We're going to get on to Bentancur, don't worry, but obviously Bentancur and Hill came on as well. So, you know, suddenly you were starting to see a kind of encouraging bit of depth there if everyone, i.e. Bentancur and Hill, get up to speed post-surgery and start to kind of play significant roles.
Yeah, I agree with that. It definitely seems a bit of a deeper bench than people have given Spurs credit for. I'm not sure I completely agree with you on Bissouma, Højbjerg. I felt like against Fulham, that was the kind of game, if you're going to miss Bissouma, that would be one of the ones you want to pick. When it comes to some of the other matches, he's been so critical. I just don't think Højbjerg's got the same skill set.
No, I agree with that.
Which I know you agree with, but as in... You would see how much you missed him if you were missing for a game.
And it
like
was
that.
Pretty telling, by the way, that Ange brought him off on 64 minutes tonight.
Protecting
him from a yellow card that would have ruled him out against Chelsea.
I was going to say, definitely not for fitness, because that game's ages away. But yeah, the yellow card, as you say. But you're right, definitely, about Udogi. I do think suddenly he looks like, along with two of the centre-backs, the goalkeeper definitely... well, in fact, there's quite a few that if you took them out, the drop-off would be very noticeable. And I do think at left-back, it's interesting that Davis might have picked up some sort of problem, but had he come off just at half-time, I don't think he was playing particularly poorly, but we were looking at going, yeah, I could see that. I could see him making that change to Emerson, because it's very different to the kind of thing he's done before. I know he has, in his sort of heyday, when it came to sort of his pace, not that Davis was ever particularly quick, but he has played wing back, but he definitely was more going outside rather than cutting in his inverted role. And I do think Udogie is pretty, if not indispensable, then a key part of that.
I actually thought Davis struggled a bit, just in terms of pace. I think if Van de Ven hadn't been next to him, there would have been a couple of sticky situations. Yeah. Van de Ven was phenomenal tonight.
Van de Ven's pace. He's just outrageous, isn't it?
He's so quick and so imposing. He's doing that job that Kyle Walker does in a back three for England. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when he's at right back, to be fair, of just being so quick and so well placed at almost all times that he's able to just cover up and almost sweep up behind the defence in a one-man operation whole time.
It's such a
really interesting to see.
It's such an asset to a team. I mean, there was one moment, I think in the second half, where Odson Edouard, who I don't know if he's super rapid, but he's no slouch, and it looked like Roadrunner going past him. I mean, just literally, just the pace he showed was what we'd been hearing all about in the Bundesliga, the quickest centre-back in the Bundesliga. We'll keep going back to it, but it's not often he's had to show it so far, such as Spurs's dominance in games mean in this amazing start to the season, but that was really, really explosive and impressive to watch. Let's move to Bentancur and then we'll come back to Sun in a minute, seeing as we're doing the substitutions. I mean, what a boost to have Bentancur back. I think originally Spurs said November was what they were looking at. We're a few days ahead of schedule, I suppose, on that one. My worry is, not worry, it's just what happens with players who have major injuries like ACLs. I remember talking about, we're at Selhurst Park right now recording this. I can think of Barry Eze, who's out injured at the moment. That was, a boost, I guess, for Palace. When he got his Achilles injury, he came back after like 5 months, which was a phenomenal return. But he wasn't really playing well or anywhere like the levels before he got injured, probably for another 6 months after that.
Well, Van Dijk's the obvious one, isn't he? He's only just seeming now getting back to where he was.
So I guess my question is, what can we really expect of Rodrigo Bentancur this season, to be honest?
Yeah, I mean, that was certainly the word, wasn't it, from the kind of press department via the medical team a few months ago, that it could be next season before he's at his very, very best again. I think everyone's realistic enough to know that it's not immediately going to be the Bentancur of the first half of last season, or indeed the second half of his first season when he first joined. And he's going to take a while to get back to that place. I think from a Spurs point of view now, they will be looking at January when Bissouma and Sarr go to the African Cup of Nations, probably for a first start for him. I would be surprised if he starts a game before then. Ange made it pretty clear he's going to kind of drip feed him back into the team. He got more minutes, I think, tonight than Ange was probably anticipating, because he came on in about the 89th and the game ended in the 102nd, I think. So,
103rd, actually.
Yeah, so there was a lot of stoppage time, albeit there was a long VAR call in there while Ayew's goal was checked. So yeah, I think he'll be eased in gently. I guess we don't know. But I would kind of caution people against expecting it to be the Bentancur of old immediately. But I think Spurs kind of need him to be up to speed and ready to at least start games by the turn of the year, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of fixtures coming up, so lots of time to get him as match fit as possible in that time, but it's just whether he's anywhere near the levels, how long it's going to take. And you make a good point about the Africa Cup of Nations. I mean, the good thing right now is that I wouldn't take Pap Sarr out of the team anyway. I think he does a lot of the work that maybe goes slightly unnoticed, maybe not for Spurs fans who've been probably analysing Ange Ball to death, but these sort of rotations coming out from playing out from the back, particularly down the right hand side where he plays, from Bukayo to Romero and then Porro, Kulusevski and Sarr. Yeah, Sarr is a key part of that in making the space for other players. And as we've seen earlier against United, he's got an eye for goal. Probably had one of his quieter games perhaps tonight, just because there just wasn't much space.
Well, he made both goals, really.
I suppose so. Yeah. I mean, well, the first goal, in a way, he did hit the cross, but it was a big deflection that spun into Madison's path.
Yeah, I give him credit for kind of bursting to the touchline. There wasn't enough of that in the first half. And then switch play for the second goal. Okay. So I thought he was very influential in the end.
Okay, I take it back.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to the guy who sort of killed off the game. Son, 8 goals now in 10 games. 8 goals actually in 7 games. And Ange was talking about his repurposing as a central striker before the game to Gary Neville on Sky Sports. And he actually mentioned Cristiano Ronaldo. He said he didn't want to make the comparison and then went and made the comparison anyway, in the way that Ronaldo went from being a winger, as we all know, to this devastating central striker, and saw Son's abilities really as being someone who could do exactly the same thing. And it's worked an absolute charm, hasn't it? I mean, we have seen it before. When Kane got injured over the years, Son's filled in very nicely there. But, and I know Tom, you know, talked about Son 2.0 before, and we've talked about him at length because he keeps scoring all these goals. But again, tonight, just so clinical. I don't know right now if I'd swap him. I guess Erling Haaland's different level, but he's right up there now as a centre forward in the Premier League.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I said on the last pod, I don't think you'd put money on anyone except maybe Salah to get closer to Haaland in terms of goals as it stands in the Premier League. He looks like that good a centre forward. That goal he scored tonight is almost becoming a kind of trademark type finish. I mean, he's already got 3 or 4 pretty similar to that, where he just makes a yard in the box, gets in front of the defender and finishes first time into a kind of almost open net. He's just so good at being in the right place in the box. His anticipation is good. His pace over short distances is still as good as anyone. He's just got this knack of just getting there and usually kind of outstripping a defender and turning in across. So yeah, he's thriving there, and I can kind of understand the Ronaldo comparison. It's, you know, when you kind of almost see players developing this kind of hunger and this kind of desire for goals. You know, we saw it in Kane firsthand for so long. You know, they get this kind of insatiable appetite for scoring. It looks like Son's kind of got that now. He's just always in there, always in the mix, and just seems to be thriving off it, really.
Yeah, and as a captain, he's just leading the way in every way. The players really seem to respond to him. You know, the Ronaldo comparisons I can see, although definitely not with that the pass that Maddison didn't make. Ronaldo would be throwing his arms up at the air. I guess he did make the pass at the end, but it was too late and wayward. But you never get that from Son. He's such a team player, just a lovely guy. I mean, anyone who's been in mixed zones like we have, he often will speak to the press front up when others won't. Always says the right thing generally, and I know that doesn't maybe count for that much, but it just sort of speaks to the mark of the man, really. And right now, he is the ultimate marksman in the Premier League.
Lovely turn of phrase there. Yeah. should we address the elephant in the room, really, which is the title race? I mean, suppose it's 5 points clear tonight.
I don't know why we're downplaying. I mean, it's fair enough that, or sort of, you know, not wanting to go near it, given that that's obviously what Andrew will do. I mean, it's totally fair enough for us to get stuck into this. I think that 26 points from 30 games, I mean, you can make sort of caveats over certain fixtures and some things have maybe gone their way, albeit it's not just pure luck that they've scored these last minute winners, because if you look back at Andrew's career, that's happened a lot at all his teams because of the way they play. Tonight at times they were winning in a different way. They're showing all different sides of the game. They're obviously not in Europe. The more it goes on, the more you start thinking of Leicester or start thinking of Chelsea with Conte when they had no Europe. And I think a lot of things have to fall for them. And I don't think we really believe that they can hold off Man City, who probably haven't really got going yet. But
well, that's kind of the thing for me. I've got to say, I'm sort of sitting here tonight and I'm suddenly just feeling a lot more optimistic. I've sort of said the same thing on this pod the whole season, which is that I'm expecting a blip and I think the squad depth will eventually catch up with them. And kind of more this goes on, the more I wonder whether actually we are witnessing something really special and kind of unique. I think the big question for me is what you just touched on there, really, is whether City are going to have their usual type of season. You know, I think if we're talking about Spurs playing a City team that are going to get around 90 points or more, then I can't see them winning the title. But I've seen a few things on Twitter and a few kind of metrics and a few commentators suggesting that, you know, City aren't sort of hitting the same levels they did last season. And I know it always takes them a while to get going, but if, and it's a big if, that, you know, we're looking at a fallow year for City, and a fallow year for City could still mean kind of 80 plus points, then, you know, maybe there's an opening there. But I think it's kind of conditional on that, really. I think we are living in an era where basically Arteta, Postecoglou, even Klopp are just kind of waiting for Guardiola to retire, really, and they're kind of being, you know, wanting their teams to be in the best possible shape to win the league when he goes. I mean, that is almost a sad reality of the Premier League at the moment.
Yeah.
But if they, you know, do have an off year, and the year after winning the treble would seem like a conceivable time for that to happen,
yeah,
then, you know, I'm starting to think Spurs might be the ones to take advantage of it. But there's a long, long way to go.
There is. I mean, on the wider point, the Premier League, and people make the comparisons of the Bundesliga now with City being so dominant. I don't really quite buy that, because I think the sort of, even if they end up winning it a lot of the time, the overall standard of the league and every sort of each individual game can be so entertaining, and they can still lose to the likes of Wolves. But back to Spurs. I mean, we haven't seen them have a setback yet, and that's key. Obviously, we talked about, you know, injuries, and they lost certain players. Africa Cup of Nations, as you point out, is going to be crucial. How they react to that, but when they have a defeat, because it will happen eventually, how they sort of get back on the horse after that, we just don't know yet. The way I'm starting to see it is speaking to Matt Barlow at Daily Mail actually after the end of the game, he was sort of saying he could see them almost having a similar season to Arsenal last year, where they sort of may fall away towards the end, but that you would snap your hand off for something like that at the start of the season. And that might not be too... I'm starting to think that you know, a close run second might actually be possible, which...
Absolutely.
Is massive progress, really.
And that rings true, really, when you consider that I think Arsenal were undone a bit by squad depth in the end. You know, they obviously lost Gabriel Jesus. They got a few injuries and suddenly results levelled out a bit. And... you know, you could easily see that happening to this Spurs team, just because if a couple of players are out for 4, 5, 6 game stretches simultaneously, a couple of first team players, then I think suddenly, you know, you would see the level of the side go down. And we've said it pretty much every week on this pod, but you kind of dread to think what would happen if, say, Vicario, one of the centre backs, or Madison, or indeed Son, suddenly wasn't fit. You know, the level would drop.
I agree, but. The thing that's one of the many things that's so impressed about Postecoglou and his side is that, as a neutral, I don't really have too many concerns watching them play a team like Palace. Like the Chelsea next will be interesting. Chelsea on a bit of a upward trajectory, and they've obviously got quality players. Once it starts to click, they're going to be difficult for anyone. But unlike other sides in the past, you know, particularly even like say Conte's side when it was going well. You know, every game looked like a war, as you put it, a battle, that they might not come on the right side of it because of that approach. Whereas this, I just feel like they'll end up breaking teams down because of the way they play eventually, as long as all their key players are fit. I mean, again, Madison wasn't even at his best. They still found a way to win any setup. That the assist to the assist, wasn't it, for the second goal? And I just have more faith that that's going to happen. So I can see them picking enough wins up against the lesser sides throughout the course of the season, that even if they dropped off against, you know, the teams that maybe should be beating them, or you know, it's far more sort of even, that should still have them in a very good position. Don't think that will really be enough to be in the number one position by the end of the season, but it's
no, I mean, they'll need to beat the teams around them, and we're gonna if they're gonna win the title, of course, and we're gonna find out, I think, in the next 10 games. Again, I feel like we've said that every week, but they have. You look at the table now, and you know they have played, I think, 7 teams in the bottom half, and the exceptions are, I think, Arsenal, Man U, and Liverpool. So the other big six rivals, and I think in the next 10 games they play something like 7 teams in the top half. So it's an inversion of what they've done so far. So it's going to be a much greater challenge. and we will learn a lot more about the side. But the most exciting thing by far is that the fact that, as Ange has repeatedly said, you know, they're only just getting started. He said before the game at his press conference that he still felt there's a lot of improvements we made in attack. They weren't fluent or natural enough in attack, and I thought we saw that in the first half tonight. I thought we saw, you know, Spurs looking a bit clunky and not really, you know, sure how to break down a kind of well-organised Palace side who, as I said at the top, just kind of sat off them and said, you know, show us what you've got. They found a way through eventually, which is to their credit, but those movements and that fluidity in the final third is going to come and is only going to keep getting better. They've got 9 days on the training ground now before Chelsea, you know, a lot of time to prepare for that game. And blimey, if they win that, you know, the optimism is going to go through the roof.
That's going to be the one. Yeah, I mean, I think Ange after the game today has said fans can dare to dream, which I think he sort of said throughout, if fans can feel how they want to. But I'm sure fans really are dreaming right now after this particular win. That's 10 games down, they're still going strong. We'll be back for a big preview podcast ahead of Chelsea, where, as you say, Dan, they can win that, then they really could be in business, Spurs. Anyway, thanks for listening.